So I've been I've been humbled by my amazing colleagues in these last three talks, and y'all are a hard act to follow because you're so extraordinary. But I'll do my best to hold up the fourth leg here. And what struck me, going through the amazing four foundations in this way is, if it hadn't been for our collective not mindfulness, the Buddha probably could have just said, "Be mindful of everything, period," and then we'd be home free. I mean, that's the basic instruction: be mindful of everything. But as especially with the second and third has been shared, we're tasked or directed to be mindful of things we're otherwise oblivious of. And that's what certainly the Vedanas, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, we just kind of, we kind of miss that and just dive in. And in terms of states of mind, it's like, looking through the world through whatever kind of glasses we have, whether they're yellow or red or whatever, and we think that's reality, but it's actually glasses. So, and it is similar with the fourth foundation. So I'm going to share a little bit about that with you, and hopefully it'll be helpful in a way that these first three have been. The fourth foundation, the language is interesting, is called mindfulness of dhammas with a small d in Pali, and this refers to specific phenomena that arise in our minds as we navigate life. And these are subtle points. And even the translation gets really interesting. Anilayo, who's a people have referred to, he's a contemporary, amazing German monk, scholar, meditator, and expert who's written multiple books on the four foundations. He calls the fourth foundation mental factors and categories in translation. And often people translate them as mind objects. But dhammas is the Pali, so it's a good place to start. And a way of looking at this is while the third foundation is about states of mind, kind of how our mind is and how we see everything because of that, the fourth foundation is more about specific mental arisings upon which our mind focuses or in particular grasps onto. All kinds of specificities that come up in our mind and what do we do with it is kind of how we can navigate why this is useful. And so the fourth foundation is made up of five lists. And these lists you sort of encounter elsewhere in the Buddha's teachings. So this has been, it puzzled me at the beginning, and I'll share. But the first three of the lists, the five hindrances, the five aggregates, and the six sense doors have to do, and I'm sort of give me a sense of a way to approach this. They have to do with factors of obscuration and identification. In a way, they have to do with obstacles that arise within us to not clinging, which is why the Buddha specifically suggests we be mindful of them. And this is really an incredibly helpful suggestion. The last two are the seven factors of awakening and the Four Noble Truths. And they sort of, on the other hand, have to do with factors or elements of freedom and as part of waking up. And there's some scholarly debate about, because in different, in the Chinese versions versus the Pali versions, like the fourth foundation isn't there in the Chinese version. So there's some scholarly debate about how much, whether all five were exactly, in fact, what the Buddha said. But the beginning ones seems pretty certain he did. So I used to find the fourth foundation kind of confounding. I kind of skipped over it. Basically, it's like, oh man, more lists, really? And I just didn't know what to do with it. But then it became clearer that, and certainly with the help of people with whom I study and read, that this seeming complication actually had to do with the innate simplicity of insight practice, which is simply cultivating mindfulness of what's arising in each moment. That's it. And it's helping remind us of places to be aware where otherwise we might not, is kind of what the Four Foundations is about. So I'm going to explore the first three in particular, and we'll watch the clock here, maybe touch on the last two a little bit, but mostly the first three because they're really useful to look at them as objects of mindfulness instead of problems. And here's a quote that I sometimes quote because I love it so much from the Numerical Discourses, quote of the Buddha. He says, the mind is clear, luminous, obscured by visiting defilements. The mind is clear, luminous, obscured by visiting defilements. So that kind of like, I mean, to me, that's like a North Star, you know, the mind is clear and luminous, but there's this stuff that gets in the way. And that's what mindfulness practice is about, is seeing, being mindful of the stuff that gets in the way so that we don't cling to it. And you could say that these three lists, the first three, include most of the key visiting defilements, most of the areas where we get stuck. And as we become more aware of those, they lose their grip on us and we kind of realize they're only visiting. They're not inherently who we are, which is what the Buddha is trying to get us to realize. And that's the magic of mindfulness. You know, the understanding that bringing mindfulness to our seeming difficulties and stuckness, it frees us from those incrementally over time. It's not like an instant switch, but over time, it frees us from us. Often in the middle of it feeling crappy is exactly when we're getting free, when the process is happening by being mindfulness right then, right then. So that's why, because it's not always pleasant, that's why cultivating mindfulness is so useful, but it's also why it's hard, because we're identified with our what we experience, and it's hard to see clearly, and also sometimes that which we are called to be mindful of isn't fun. But through the process of that, we get free. So in my own mind, this is my own phrase, but sometimes those first three, I call them like climbing the mountain, because that's stuff that ain't easy, but it's so useful and it gets us somewhere, gets us somewhere. So I'll walk through the first three with some suggestions and about how you might use them. So the first of the three is what's called the five hindrances. And that's a list of mental factors that obstruct us, that are essentially where we get sort of log jammed in our practice, slowed down, derailed. And the five hindrances are desire, aversion, there's a pulls there, desire and aversion, sloth and torpor, which is one thing, and restlessness on the other hand, which are also pulls, and doubt. So desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. And you know, probably all of us at different times are plagued by or encounter any one of these, maybe over the course of a day or over the course of a sitting. You know, how often are we diverted by things we don't want, or, you know, unpleasant comes up and then that sort of becomes an aversion? Or how often do we sink into sloth and torpor? It's kind of heavy mind, especially after lunch. Or twitching with restlessness, you know? Or even doubt, you know, plaguing us in subtle ways. For me personally, probably, For me, the big change in thinking about this as part of the fourth foundation is now I look at these not as obstacles to be overcome like there's a war, but rather, or I don't look at them as personal failings so much anymore, but rather just objects of mindfulness. You know, they're just objects of mindfulness. Well, you just bring mindfulness to those characteristics and see what you see over time. So in my own practice, that's what I was going to say, that restlessness is kind of my bugaboo, can be very strong and difficult sometimes. You know, it's just hard to sit still and I just want to get up and take off and I get all these ideas and it's kind of yanks at me. But as I've internalized it as part of the four foundations of mindfulness, this amazing roadmap the Buddha created, I just increasingly be able to shift my practice to mindfully observing restlessness instead of reacting to it or thinking it's a problem. And then it gets really interesting because, you know, it has all these aspects. There's this whole I don't know how about you guys, but you folks, excuse me, but you know, like buzzing in the body, kind of like wanting to move, or this compulsive planning often in the mind. And to be able to see that mindfully, then it becomes a part of a practice, and it becomes a doorway to freedom, not a problem. It's like totally transformational. So this whole arena of the five hindrances, it's a doorway. The second, by the way, you may hear the cat outside. She's meowing to get in, but she'll be climbing all over me right at the moment, and she's going to have to wait. She thinks this is I'm sitting in front of a laptop. That must mean I'm supposed to pet her. The second of the three lists is in English, often called the five aggregates. In Sanskrit, it's skandhas. In Pali, it's khandhas. And it refers to the Buddha's amazing understanding of these five factors that add up, or from which we make our mistaken sense of self. It's just, it's a profound area. And the more, I think probably the case for all of us, the more we look into those five factors, which means be mindful of them when they arise. It doesn't mean figuring them out. I mean, there's a place for that. You can think about them, but especially being mindful of them when they arise, the more pivotal and freeing they are. And the flip side is, if we're not mindful of them, they just sort of entrap us in selfing and ignorance and all that personalization that chases us around and chases everybody around. So to be mindful of them when they arise is just amazing. And the five are, because that's part of the job of Buddhist Essentials, is tell you the lists. The five are material form or form, rupa, pleasant or unpleasant, vedanas, just talked about, same as the second foundation, perception, which is basically something, or we have made contact with something, perceptions, like when we essentially name it, that's green. You know, we're saying, oh, green thing, round thing, whatever. And mental formations, or sometimes volitions is translated also, is basically the whole process of thinking about something, deciding about something, deciding to do something about something, all that processing, and then consciousness. So those five things, you know, and check it out for yourself in terms of how you build your sense of self and see what goes on. And it, I mean, personally, the more I've worked with those, the more I've been kind of, the brilliance of the Buddha is quite the right term, but the more I've become convinced that's in fact exactly how it is. And that's what our sense of self is made from. And in terms of these five, just sort of, as in all these kinds of things, there's like a ladder of subtlety. I mean, I think that's the case with the four foundations. They get subtler and subtler through the four. And then in terms of the five skandhas, they're also a ladder of subtlety in terms of what goes on. You know, we make contact with the physical, then there's this sort of reptilian response of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And I mean, it's amazing. You look at sometimes, like, I don't know what, Pacific Magazine or Seattle Times, sometimes feel like it's all about vedanas. Like, what exquisite taste sensation is going to be really pleasant? And here's the 25 restaurants that exquisitely cook chanterelle mushrooms in the perfect way that you like it. You know, it's like, okay, really? So, but that whole pleasant, unpleasant, neutral thing, you know, it's more subtle than the perception, is we have that contact and then the whole process of naming them and then how we think about them and then consciousness. So it's this ladder. So the point is, because it's the fourth foundation, to think of this list as objects of mindfulness. And it's important because it's not like, you know, we start with the breath and we're always returning to the breath and that's the place to return to, but it's not like anyone is more important than the other. I mean, the Buddha was real clear about that. So if we're in a place where what's presenting to us is vedanas, then that becomes the predominant object right now. And that's exactly precisely where you ought to be right now. The breath is something to kind of reboot to. You know, it's always there to reboot to it, but it's not like you have to force yourself to go back. No, be where you are. The thing that's making itself known, be mindful there. That's where the doorway opens. But to have all these lists of supposed difficulties structured into the fourth foundation is just transformational, because they're just not problems. They're like, oh, how interesting, how doorway. You know, freedom, right here, right in the middle of this muddle, is also a doorway. And, you know, this sense of self is, I mean, Buddha says like a million times about this whole illusion of me, mine, and me, myself, and mine. It's essentially the core obstacle to freedom, where we get attached to stuff. We think it's us. And we attach to that. And so therefore, it's really hard to see through. I mean, that's like the journey of this practice, is years and years and years of slowly, slowly unpacking and unraveling and unlayering the leaves or the onion skins or whatever of seeing through it. So it's okay. In fact, it's good if we return to this again and again and again in our practice. But it's right there, fourth foundation. It's all good. So, you know, sort of look at it as a joyful thing. You know, just keep waking up to that, and slowly, slowly, it gets clearer. And Rodney Smith, he uses the term thinning around all of this. And I think it's really apt. It's really cool because that's what's going on. You know, it's thinning. It doesn't mean we're aware of it one time and poof, it goes away. No, it'll be right there again. But it's slowly, slowly, we see through it, and it gets less and less graspy, and it thins over time. And that's where the freedom comes in, being less sticky. Time check. Okay. By the way, sometimes for those of you who don't know, I tend to write talks kind of like, because I used to be a writer, so I tend to write things, but then I say what I'm going to say, and then I look to see if I said what I wanted to say. So sometimes I look, and I run it on the side in Evernote, so I'm kind of skinning down the right side of myself. I kind of glance off to the side, that's what's going on. So the third of these amazing three is the six sense doors. And it's part of the tapestry of the four foundations, because, you know, Jerry mentions the six sense doors from a certain point of view as part of body, but in another point of view, they're also here in the fourth foundation. And they're eye, ear, nose. Oh, what am I doing here? Eye, ear, nose, taste, tongue, and mind. And body. So these are the ways we contact the world around us. You know, we make this contact. And these sense doors are infinitely beguiling. And they take us off. We pay attention and they take us off, and we get all engaged with them. So again, this is like a place to be mindful. And when that arises, you know, when we're hearing the cat meowing outside the door, or we're hungry, or there's an obnoxious noise from traffic going by, or whatever, just to be aware of the sense door. Maybe we'll be aware of unpleasant too, but to be aware of the sense door, to bring mindfulness to it. That's what the Buddha is suggesting here. And this is, you know, this is like one of the most beguiling areas, just what crosses our sense doors. That's how we navigate the universe, is all these portals. So it's inherently in the mind. So it's inherently going to be completely diverting unless we're mindful of it. And it may still be diverting, but we'll be mindful of the diverting. So it's this amazingly powerful tool. So that to have that be in the fourth foundation is just so amazing, so wonderful. So that's the kind of underlying thread, is that by identifying these three as parts of the fourth foundation, and thus objects of mindfulness, all these seeming obstacles turn into opportunities. And we can just kind of remind ourselves of that. And it really is, you know, it's, how do I say, it just, not to be a Pollyanna, but it turns things in a positive direction. You know, the very things that seems like, oh man, it's just too much. But just the mindfulness of that is the turning of the door, is the opening of the door, the turning of the wheel. So it's pretty amazing. And all of these first three, the hindrances, the aggregates, and the sense doors, are places where we can get lost or stalled on the spiritual path if we let ourselves get stuck there, or if we take it too seriously. And because of this, we'll often try to fight them off, or think we did something wrong, or make them enemies, and we don't have to. We can just cultivate mindfulness of that. We don't need an adversarial relationship. And you can see that in how, when you read the life of the Buddha and the suttas, there's a sense of relaxedness in how people awaken. And also, especially for the women here, or for anybody, the Theragatha, the poems of the early Buddhist nuns, which is so amazing, because they actually talk about seeing the Buddha, which is really amazing right there. But they often awaken from these extraordinary little opening moments. You know, they pinch out a candle and the light disappears and suddenly, poof, right there, they awaken. So there's always this relaxedness in how we awaken. And so in terms of all these seeming difficulties, just relaxing into being mindful opens that doorway. And I just found this just transformational. You know, it's been so helpful in terms of not reacting in difficult situations. It's just like there's a whole ton of, oh, you again, you know, to that feeling in the gut, or that part of me just feeling aversion. I mean, sometimes I just like find myself pulling up the hindrance and say, oh, that one, you know. But it just really takes the wind out of the sails of that which would have knocked us over, to get nautical. And so it's just amazing. And I'll touch on the last two just because it's useful, but briefly. So the fourth is a 7 factors of awakening. And these are all natural and sequential and kind of leading to the next. They're kind of self-revealing. They're mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. No time to go into any depth there. But the fact that they're in the fourth foundation, it kind of opens this way to be mindful when they, even tastes of those things arise. You know, if joy arises in practice, pay attention. If there's equanimity, pay attention. Don't get, you know, stuck there. Oh, tranquil. I'm feeling equanimity. I think I'll just grab onto that. Don't pay attention. So it kind of bids us keep opening, keep opening, keep opening. Because, you know, the goal, nibbana, it's often referred to as quenching, like cooling or not clinging. Joseph Goldstein talks about not clinging a lot. They seem sort of innocuous. I used to think, not clinging, really? That's it? But the more you look at it, the more you feel, yeah, that is it. Because it's just a complete letting go. So to be mindful when even these states arise, and you have hints or tastes of them, be mindful there. And there's freedom there. And the Buddha says, in terms of, say, the equanimity factor, he says, if the equanimity awakening factor is present in one, one knows there is the equanimity awakening factor in me. Simple as that. Simple as that. And the very last one, the Four Noble Truths, you know, whether or not it was added later, who knows? But nonetheless, as we know, they are the unsatisfactory nature of dependence on conditioned existence, otherwise known as dukkha or suffering. The fact that this is caused by clinging, the possibility of freedom from this, and the Eightfold Path to accomplish that. That's the Four Noble Truths. And to cultivate mindfulness of these is really interesting. You don't exactly like run into them in practice the way the first three. You run into those in practice. This is more something you think about. But just to bring mindfulness to it as we explore those, especially dukkha, you know, we do run into that. And to bring mindfulness to that, what is this unsatisfactoriness I'm experiencing? It's different from pain. Pain happens. But the Buddha experienced pain and he didn't suffer. That's an amazing thing to think about. He experienced pain and he did not suffer. And so that's a direction we can go in bringing mindfulness to that, to suffering in particular, helps us unpack it and see what it is. So I think that's about where I'm going to stop, because I want us to have a chance to sit for 20 minutes. Okay. So I'll just sort of, since I'm wrapping up the whole four foundations, I'll just say becoming aware of these four foundations is transformational. And it's transformational when there's an obvious opening, and it's transformational in the middle of difficulty. So it's always transformational. If you're having a really difficult moment with the person you love most, it's a great time to practice. I mean, just see what's being triggered, where you're feeling it. You know, first foundation is usually big time happening, strong emotions, burning in the gut. But it may be often the fourth foundation and how you're feeling me, me, me. I'm right. See that, you know? So wherever it arises, these four foundations are so useful. And what makes them useful is the magic of mindfulness. No stone is left unturned, and everything is a doorway.